All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melonheads of the world. Happy, what day is it? It's Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It's December 4th, 2025. And our top story this morning is MFED independence, or lack thereof. The bond market, it seems, is worried about the prospects of a Fed chairman, Kevin Hassett. That is the most likely person to be nominated for Fed chair, at least according to betting markets and degenerate gamblers on the internet right now. Kevin Hassett is currently the chairman of the White House Economic Council, or whatever that acronym is, the WEC. He is very much a Trump lackey. Let's be honest here. He's being nominated so that he can go do what Trump wants him to do at the Fed, which is lower rates in order to juice the stock market, juice the asset bubble, keep everything up. He doesn't want an asset price correction, a market crash on his watch, certainly not heading into the midterms. And so these bond market participants all sent letters to Secretary Bessent, who, for whatever reason, the Treasury Secretary is the person who apparently is going to be picking the Fed chair. How's that Fed independence going for you? Let's be honest, we never really had any Fed independence because the last Fed chair before Powell was Janet Yellen, who ended up being Treasury Secretary. It's a revolving door between these two institutions. Look, guys, there's never been any Fed independence. All right. We learned in 2019 with repo madness that Congress has basically made the Federal Reserve their bitch. They call it fiscal dominance. The wasteful spending in Washington, D.C. forces the Federal Reserve to come to the rescue of the bond market time and time again. And every time, the average person pays the price in the form of inflation and wage suppression. We have seen this over and over again. It's basically been a thing since, I don't know, as long as I have been alive. And it's only getting worse, and it's getting more frequent with time. And so the bond market is saying, hey, President Trump, we know we've never really had this Fed independence thing, but you're making a mistake. You're being so arrogant as to say it out loud, what we all know has been a thing for a long time, that you're going to make the Fed do what you want the Fed to do, even though you're not supposed to say that. You're not supposed to admit that, especially not when the cameras are running. And the bond market might sniff this out and get worried about it. And they're worried about bond market vigilantes here. If you're cutting interest rates into already high inflation, the bond market vigilantes is this term for investors who just aren't dumb enough to loan their money to the government long term when they know the interest rate they're going to receive is less than the rate of inflation. And so we created this term, bond market vigilantes, like freaking Batman is running around Gotham in the middle of the night dumping bonds. No, it's just people coming to their senses about what the currency is going to be worth and selling U.S. treasuries. And if that happens, if bond markets come to their senses because a lackey is put in at the Federal Reserve, well, the net effect could be the opposite of what President Trump is trying to accomplish. He wants lower rates so that mortgages get cheaper and so that cars get cheaper. And look, for whatever reason, he wants that. In my opinion, it's the wrong thing. But if you put a lackey in and the bond market freaks out and the vigilantes take over, you're going to see things like the 10-year yield rise on that news, even as the Fed is cutting because the bond market investors are no longer willing to lend to the government without a higher interest rate. And if that happens, then the mortgages get more expensive and the cars get more expensive anyway. It's counterproductive. So this is what the worry is. And if enough people complain, it might not be Hassett. It might be someone else. And honestly, in the long run, I think it's irrelevant because whoever gets put in there ultimately will do what everybody does, yield to the bond market and give them what they want and turn on the money printers and eventually buy up those long-term treasury bonds in order to suppress those interest rates, causing more inflation, causing further devaluation of savings. And we wonder why gold is $4,200 and silver's pushing 60 here. It's not a mistake. It's not a crazy coincidence. They can see what is coming. Also, by the way, I got to send a shout out to my friend Melody Wright, M3 Melody on Twitter. Fantastic post yesterday. She caught the Federal Reserve lying about home prices in order to make it look like the housing market isn't in decline. Good news, everybody. Your chocolate ration has been increased to 20 grams a week from 30 grams a week. Name the book. Let me know down in the comments. We've also got the BOJ. They're already telegraphing weakness this morning. We've got BOJ Governor Ueda was out expressing uncertainty about what the neutral interest rate may be, and therefore it's uncertain just how much they're going to hike interest rates. An unusually dovish statement. And look, if you're uncertain about what the neutral rate is, let me help you with a little metaphor, all right? If this very large person steps on a scale and then they put their hand on the scale in order to suppress what the scale reading is going to say, and then this fat person says, I'm unsure what my neutral rate is, let me help you out. Take your fingers off the freaking scale, see where it lands. That is your neutral weight. And so if you're a central banker and you're running what the neutral rate is, stop manipulating it, stop controlling it, and let the free market decide. Hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. But look, Japan's borrowing costs keep rising. He's making these dovish statements to try to stop that. And maybe he hasn't quite figured out that the reason borrowing costs in Japan are rising is for the same reason I described about the bond market not liking prospects for a Fed chair asset. People aren't willing to lend to the Japanese government because the Japanese government is just destroying the value of the currency. These things might just be related. I don't know. Crazy, I know. We've also got Challenger job cuts are out this morning. 71,000 jobs were cut in the month of November. That is up 23% year over year. Even though the headlines in Bloomberg are job cuts decline in November. Well, yeah, the job cuts went down in November versus October because generally companies fire fewer people in November because the holidays are just around the corner, although that's becoming less and less of a thing as we talked about yesterday. The important thing is they're up considerably, 23% versus where they were last year. And year-to-date job cut announcements in the U.S. are up 54% versus the first 11 months of 2024. Job market keeps getting worse, something we already know. The real economy is in recession. But hey, we don't care about the real economy, right? It's all about them AI bubbles, baby. Come on. We got Alphabet's new chips could be a $900 billion secret sauce, according to Bloomberg this morning. My opinion, these Alphabet chips and Gemini's new large language model outperforming OpenAI may actually be the pin that breaks this bubble. Because if people stop paying for OpenAI's ChatGPT product because Gemini is better, and if people stop buying NVIDIA's chips because Google's are better, well, then what happens to OpenAI and what happens to NVIDIA? Those are the two companies that this bubble is built around. So even if Google starts doing really well, it might cause investors to come to their senses and stop aimlessly pumping money into this bubble. Google's success may actually be what breaks the camel's back here. It's kind of ironic. Maybe that's why Morgan Stanley is out talking about how they want to offload data center risk in the form of significant risk transfers. In other words, dump all that risky crap onto the books of pensions. Gee, nobody saw that coming. Again. Also, we've got a guy who just lost $500 million in private credit, says that's okay. Interesting story there. Good news. It's somebody else's money. No wonder he thinks it's okay. We've got Anthropic says OpenAI is taking on too much risk. Meanwhile, Sam Altman says he wants to build a data center in space. I kid you not. Data centers in space. What stage of this bubble? Good God. Ilya Sutskever, who used to work for Sam Altman, he quit because Sam Altman was cutting corners on safety, resulting in the untimely deaths of some teenagers, unfortunately. Well, Ilya Sutskever is in the news, and he is saying back to the research phase that scaling compute is not enough. In other words, this big giant experiment of taking the attention white paper at Google and bombarding it with all the data that they could steal and all the compute that money could buy, financed by the biggest accounting fraud in history, that grand experiment is a failure. Back to the drawing board sucks about your 401k. Again, nobody saw this coming. We've got earnings from Snowflake and Salesforce. We'll talk about those. And we've got a 2020s bingo update. Who had radioactive shrimp on their 2020s bingo card? I kid you not, radioactive shrimp. Found out where the radiation came from. Not going to want to miss that one at the end of this show. Hey, how about we shrink my big melon of a head? And let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Hey, don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the Melonheads, because we do this one every day. And the S&P 500 looks like we've got some green shoots popping up. All right, somebody let me know in the comments what happened at 9 a.m. Once again, as soon as I hit the live button, we get news. S&P is up 20 points and rising 0.28% to the upside. The Dow, meanwhile, is not rising along with the S&P, at least not yet, up 25 points or 0.07%. And we've got the NASDAQ, okay, rising along with the S&P. Something just happened in AI. I don't know what it is. 75 points higher, 0.29% to the upside. Maybe it's the radioactive shrimp that's driving the markets higher. I don't know. We'll just keep our eyes open as we go here. Meanwhile, the U.S. dollar is pretty much unchanged here, lower by one basis point, 98.87 for the Dixie. Not a lot going on there. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields higher on the long end, lower on the short end. See also that whole thing about when the Fed lowers, it doesn't always help with the long end because of the bond vigilantes. Kind of seeing that today. 30-year Treasury, 4.743. Dyslexia is a bitch. We are higher by almost two basis points. The 10-year, 4.084, higher by 2.5 points. The 2-year's at 3.514. That's higher by almost 3 points. And the 1-month is down by a basis point, 3.759. And we've got Mish is Johnny on the spot with the news here saying breaking Meta surges over 5%. After Mark Zuckerberg says the company is looking at cutting metaverse efforts by up to 30%. Okay, that's freaking hilarious. All right, so the reason why the market is ripping right now is because Meta, 5 years too late, came to their senses about metaverse spending. Dagnabbit, that real estate investment in the metaverse was just about to pay off. Curse you, Mark Zuckerberg. You've done it to me again. All right. And apparently that is tracking the whole NASDAQ higher here. All right. That's interesting. Well, let's just bring up that story. Let's see. CNBC probably has it. Let's see what we got here. Where's my red bar across the screen, CNBC? You're supposed to give me something like that. Nope. It has not hit the news yet. Hasn't hit the airwaves yet, but we'll see if that one pops up in a bit. In the meantime, let's talk about what's going on at the BOJ. BOJ's Ueda flags uncertainty on how far rates can go up. They need to go higher, but he's already telegraphing weakness. And look, Kazuo Ueda, this guy, he was supposed to come in like an angry hawk on fire in 2023 when he took over at the BOJ. Everybody's like, he's going to hike right away. And he has done next to nothing. They raised rates from like negative to nothing. That's all he's really done. Other than that, he's just made a bunch of hawkish statements followed by a bunch of dovish statements. Meanwhile, those long-term borrowing costs in Japan continue to creep up here. Bank of Japan Governor Kazuo Ueda said on Thursday there was uncertainty on how far the central bank could raise interest rates due to the difficulty of estimating the country's neutral rate of interest. Unfortunately, the neutral rate of interest is a concept for which we can only produce an estimate with quite a wide range, Ueda told Parliament. Way to put yourself out there, Kazuo. We have continued to make efforts to narrow the estimated range. If we can successfully do so, we would like to disclose our findings. Now, here's what they mean. The neutral rate is how high can we raise rates without the stock market freaking out and the bond market freaking out? The answer is not much higher. And here is why. Take a look at long-term borrowing costs in Japan. This is the Japanese 10-year JGB or Japanese government bond yield. And look at what it has done over the last year and a half up and to the right. No sign of slowing. If we zoom in, guys, these are daily candles. You can see this thing is actually accelerating to the upside. That started a few weeks ago with Sanae Takaichi taking over and immediately talking about stimulus. And you can see we're steepening as we go here. Maybe that's why Kazuo Ueda is coming out with these dovish statements, trying to calm everybody down. Maybe he doesn't realize the reason long-term rates are rising is because of your dovish statements. But they haven't quite figured that one out yet over at the BOJ. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is pretty much unchanged here. 42.04 for spot gold. That's higher by a buck and change. February COMEX futures, 42.35, higher by $2 and change, about 0.05% there. Silver is taking a break here off from the recent highs. 57.67 for spot silver, off by 81 cents this morning or 1.4%. That's after tickling that 60 number earlier yesterday. Meanwhile, the March COMEX futures, 58.11, down by about 50 cents or 0.83% to the downside. I still like the shiny. Copper is lower by 0.44%. Platinum is off by about the same amount. Palladium down 1.14%. And crude oil is higher by about 0.4%. 59.19 for January 26 WTI futures. That's higher by about a quarter. Looking over at Bitcoin, we've got 92,679, a tad bit higher than we were yesterday, but still kind of in this range that we've been in. We're looking at hourly charts right now, or hourly candles right now. Not a lot of movement in Bitcoin this morning. Once again, guys, these candles here, I found these last three big moves in Bitcoin to be a little bit suspicious. I think some whale is out there jerking our chain. As always, you got to keep an eye on MicroStrategy. That's my leading candidate for FTX this time. All right, let's talk about the title story this morning here. Bond investors warned of Hassett as potential Fed chair over rate cut fears, Financial Times initially reported. This one in Reuters. Bond investors have expressed concerns to the U.S. Treasury that Kevin Hassett could aggressively cut interest rates to align with President Donald Trump's preferences, Financial Times reported Wednesday, citing several people familiar with the conversations. The discussions with executives at major Wall Street banks, asset management giants, and other big players in the U.S. debt market took place in November before Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent held his second round of interviews with candidates to replace Jerome Powell. And right away, I got to point out here, why is a sitting Treasury Secretary interviewing potential Fed chairman? I thought the Treasury and the Fed were supposed to be independent and two totally different things. And I get that that all went out the window when we put Janet Yellen in charge at the Treasury when she stepped down from the Fed. I get that there's never really been any Fed independence, but we're supposed to pretend there is. Isn't this like really just a big act, you know, where we all play tough for the cameras so that the bond market doesn't freak out, even though we all know we're hopelessly doomed because Congress can't get their act together? Well, we're just not pretending anymore. Honestly, that's probably the biggest mistake President Trump has made throughout this whole fiasco of demanding Fed rate cuts and putting his lackeys in charge over there, is you're just not supposed to say it out loud. That's the mistake he made. That's his arrogance reflecting there. Reuters could not immediately verify the report. The bankers and investors were worried that Hassett could agitate for indiscriminate rate cuts, even if inflation continues to run above the Fed's 2% target, the report added. Look, inflation has been running ahead of the Fed's 2% target for five freaking years, and we're already cutting rates. So what, the bankers are worried Hassett's going to come in and do exactly what Jerome Powell is currently doing? Again, we've never had independence. It's just we don't like that Donald Trump says it out loud. Members of the Treasury Borrowing Advisory Committee were among those consulted, Financial Times said, adding that when Hassett met the group earlier this year, he focused on White House priorities, including Mexican drug cartels, rather than the market. And look, that's stupid, right? When Janet Yellen came into the Fed and said climate change needs to be a priority for the Federal Reserve, that was stupid. That's your pre-existing political biases and dispositions have no business in monetary policy. Just like the talk of Mexican drug cartels, which are awful. It's got nothing to do with monetary policy and interest rates at the Federal Reserve. Shut up. That's not your job. Let somebody else do that. Anyways, if the bond market freaks out over Fed Chairman Hassett, those long-term interest rates could go higher. That's really what these bond investors are worried about. That's what the banks and the Wall Street firms are worried about, is the Fed losing control of the long end of the yield curve if this illusion, and it is an illusion, of Fed independence is ever weakened. And speaking of the Fed, I got to send a shout out to Miss Melody Wright. She has been just fantastic recently. And man, I saw this post yesterday. This blew my mind. And apparently this is the second time this has happened. Some real BS Melody has caught here. The second time I've caught them, last time they revised the seasonal peak in June of 2024 down prior to reporting June of 2025 with no note. Missed it initially, but found it when looking for the November prices on FRED. That's the St. Louis Federal Reserve website, which hadn't been published yet. Save every download and every press release. And what Melody is talking about here is she had just caught the Federal Reserve faking their data in median list prices. This is as provided by Realtor.com to the St. Louis FRED. So it's actually Realtor.com faking the data and then the Fed reporting the Realtor.com data. But this is some 1984 shit going on here. Look, here's the original price, the median list price that Realtor.com reported, and then the Fed repeated it. In October of 2025, they listed it as 424. I'm sorry, this is the October 24 number that they reported last month. It was 424,950. All right, now the price that they reported for October of 2024 in November was lowered to 422.5. All right. So for some reason, the year ago price was lowered by what? A little over $2,000 between October and November. Now, why did they do that? Well, look at the October of 2025 number that the Fed just reported, that Realtor.com just reported, 424.2. All right. So what happened is the number for this month comes out at what it is, and they changed the year ago number. They lowered it to make it look like home prices are still going up. They're not. They're going down. If we went by the original reported number, it would show home prices actually dropped by $750. And again, this is just median list price, not even what they're actually closing for. But instead, because we changed the numbers a year later, it looks like home prices went up by almost $2,000. Good news, everybody. Your chocolate ration has been raised to 20 grams a week. Good catch, Melody. I would never think to look for something like this. I'm glad somebody is looking and somebody is holding these people accountable. That is some straight up BS. How come the 400 PhDs at the Federal Reserve didn't catch that before they repeated the data that Realtor.com reports? Why did Melody Wright catch it and not the 400 PhDs at the Fed? Good question. Good job, Melody. All right. Challenger job cuts just came out also. As we're faking the housing data to make the economy look stronger than it is, job cuts are rising, even though Bloomberg told us that job cuts fell last month. U.S.-based employers announced 71,321 job cuts in November of 2025. That's the highest for the month since 2022, back when we were in a recession and big tech was cutting jobs like crazy. And that also compares to 57,727 a year earlier, marking the eighth time this year that job cuts were higher than the corresponding month a year earlier. However, layoffs had fallen from 153,074 in October, which was the highest for an October month since 2003. All right, so they're up year over year. It's the eighth month, it's the eighth time out of 11 this year that they were higher than the year ago number. Bloomberg goes with the headline because they fell versus October because they're supposed to. Layoffs always slow down during the holidays. Most of the cuts were announced by telecommunication providers, 15,000, primarily on plans from Verizon. We talked about that yesterday, companies announcing job cuts that aren't necessary, but doing it anyway during the holidays. Verizon was the worst offender. They laid off 13,000 people, or they're going to lay off 13,000 people between now and year end. That's pretty awful, right before Christmas. We've also got tech with 12,300 layoffs. Food companies, particularly those that handle beef products, 6,700 layoffs. Services, 5,500. Retailers, 3,200. Job cuts announced in retail in November. That's a new one. Restructuring led all reasons for job cuts in November with 20,217. Through November, employers have announced 1.170 million job cuts. That's an increase of 54%. From the 761,000 announced in the first 11 months of last year. The job market continues to weaken here, guys. That is a 54% year-over-year increase in the first 11 months of the year, job cuts. Year-to-date job cuts are the highest level since 2020. You may recall 2020 was not such a good year. So the job market continues to get worse. Meanwhile, Alphabet's AI chips are a potential $900 billion secret sauce. They are just glowing over Alphabet's recent Gemini 3 release and the $900 billion potential market. We've already seen Meta is potentially in talks to buy some of these Alphabet chips. Maybe they're going to use the metaverse money to buy some of the chips now. And congratulations on Meta coming to your senses to finally stop wasting money on the metaverse. Good God. Look, guys, I mentioned this in the monologue. I don't think this is the secret sauce they think it is. Even though Gemini 3, I haven't used it, but I hear that it is much better than any of the other large language models out there, that it's an improvement. That's not good for OpenAI. And apparently Gemini 3 was trained on their TPUs, tensor processing units, not NVIDIA's GPUs. That's not good for NVIDIA. And honestly, considering where we're at with the scale of the debt and the bubble that's going on right now and the endless need for new capital at OpenAI, Alphabet's success here may be what pops the bubble here because it could accelerate the decline of OpenAI and thus the sales at NVIDIA. And I think OpenAI going belly up and NVIDIA sales declining would more than offset any potential gains from what Alphabet is talking about here. And maybe that's why Morgan Stanley considers offloading some of its data center exposure. Uh-oh, we got risk in data center space. Quick, put it in grandma's pension. Morgan Stanley, one of the key players in financing the artificial intelligence race, is considering offloading some of its data center exposure via a so-called significant risk transfer. A significant risk transfer, all right, that's when a bank or an investment bank like Morgan Stanley, they've got all these IOUs from data center providers. This is dog shit debt. So what do? They sell a significant risk transfer. That's when someone like a pension fund comes in and takes a big lump of money and they put it into escrow. And in exchange for that escrow money being stored at the bank pays that pension fund a regular fee, a regular interest rate. All right. So the pension is chasing yield here. They're getting a little bit of money in exchange for putting all that money on hold. However, the bank has now offloaded that risk. If the debt of those data centers goes bad, then the bank keeps all that money that's sitting in escrow and the pension fund no longer gets the interest rates. In other words, the risk has been transferred from the bank to the pension fund, and the pension fund is left holding the bag if these data centers burst, which they are clearly going to do. So hurry up and park that risk on the balance sheets of grandma's pension. The bank had held preliminary talks with potential investors about an SRT tied to a portfolio of loans to businesses involved in AI infrastructure, according to people with knowledge of the matter, who asked not to be identified because the information is confidential. Morgan Stanley in October arranged over $27 billion of debt and about $2.5 billion of equity financing for a special purpose vehicle tied to the development of Meta's Hyperion data center in Richland Parish, Louisiana. By the way, a special purpose vehicle, that's very Enron-esque. That's when they take the debt from the data centers and it doesn't live on Meta's balance sheet anymore. It's in this separate company that Meta owns and it doesn't appear on their income statements anymore. That's how they hide how much money they're losing in their data centers. That's what Enron did. Okay, that's great. And now we want to take that risk and put it in the pension funds. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. The bank also led three recent junk bond offerings from Terra Wolf, Cypher Mining, and Applied Digital, in which the proceeds were earmarked in part to help finance construction of new data center facilities. Guys, this is toxic sludge. And they're trying to sell SRTs, which means they're trying to get the risk of that toxic sludge off of their own books and into your retirements. But remember, this bubble is great. Meanwhile, this guy at BlackRock, private credit defaults are coming, and that's okay, says a guy who just lost $500 million in private credit of somebody else's money. There he is right there. Loan defaults in the fastest growing world of private credit are coming, but won't be catastrophic and are a healthy rebalancing. After a decade of easy money and few consequences, said a BlackRock senior executive. Coming from an incredibly benign period in the credit markets, the existence of defaults feels like a signal that there's a problem. And that's what I reject, said Michael Patterson at Semaphore's Ledger Live event Tuesday. There will be people that do this job better and people that do these job worse. He's one of the ones who does it worse, by the way. The collapses this fall of several highly indebted companies has unnerved investors and drawn told-you-so wagging from private credit firms' bank rivals. Patterson was co-founder of HPS Investment Partners, a pioneer in private credit that BlackRock bought earlier this year. And when you saw HPS, I saw this HPS Investment Partners, and I just thought, I'm done with this guy. I'm freaking done with him. If you remember HPS, that's the company that sold $500 million or bought $500 million of debt from Carrioxx Capital. Remember Bankim Brombat and the guy who faked accounts receivables, like faked invoices, created fake email addresses in order to borrow money against fake collateral from HPS Investment Partners. And now, of course, Bankim Brombat is bankrupt and he fled the country. And HPS Investment Partners has been bought by BlackRock. And BlackRock has now lost $500 million because of that. Yeah, the guy who's responsible for that is now telling you, hey, that's okay, right? This is where it gets really good, though. He got some backup from Jay Clayton, a former Securities and Exchange Commission chairman who is now the top federal prosecutor in Manhattan. All of the pearl clutching over private credit writ large is a little overblown, Clayton told Semaphore at the event. There are areas of the private credit market where there's been recent trouble and we should continue to look, he said. Signaling out loans that are backed by soft collateral like future cash flows and licensing agreements rather than hard assets that could be seized in a default. And then they go on to say HPS lent hundreds of millions of dollars to Carioc. That's Bankin Brombot's company. But look, a guy who just lost $500 million, a guy who clearly sucks at his job, didn't realize that this clown was faking invoices. His auditors didn't catch it. Lost $500 million of other people's money. He says that's okay. And now you've got a federal prosecutor who's a former SEC chairman coming to his defense, referring to outrage over $500 million of other people's money being lost as pearl clutching. That's the regulator referring to that as pearl clutching. Hey, buddy, it's your freaking job to police this BS, not criticize the people who are angry over $500 million of pension and retirement money going up in smoke because this a-hole at this conference didn't do his freaking job, and you're so soft on crime that you're going to refer to it as pearl clutching. Holy shit. Kleptocracy is like the law of the land right now. I couldn't believe my eyes when I read this article. Meanwhile, we've got Anthropic CEO says some tech firms are too risky with their AI spending. This article was pretty funny. And honestly, a guy who is too risky with his AI spending telling other people they're being too risky with their AI spending. Apparently, there's tiers to this stuff about just how risky you get. There's Dario Amodi there, the CEO of Anthropic. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodi suggested that some AI companies are taking on too much risk, you think? By committing to spend hundreds of billions of dollars that they don't have, if not more, to develop and support AI systems. We as a company try to manage as responsibly as we can, he said. And then I think there are some players who are YOLOing, he added, using an abbreviation for you only live once, without naming any names, OpenAI. Amodi said some companies pull the risk dial too far. All right. How about an example of pulling the risk dial too far? How about Sam Altman explored deals to build a competitor to SpaceX? Why? Because the OpenAI CEO has publicly talked about the possibility of building a rocket company and the potential for developing data centers in space. Okay. Apparently there are tiers to this. Do we need to talk about just how ridiculously expensive it would be to build a data center in space? Every gram of mass that you put into orbit, it costs $60,000 or $70,000 just to put a gram of mass in orbit. I forget what the number is. It has come down quite a bit in recent years because of Elon Musk and SpaceX, but it's still outrageously expensive. And oh, that's great. We're going to build all these freaking data centers in space. They're probably going to fall apart and turn into space junk. And then future generations who are going to try to get off this planet and go do some space tourism or something are going to have their space shuttles colliding with Sam Altman's space trash that's still up in orbit for centuries because he wanted to build a freaking data center in space. It doesn't matter. This is never going to happen. But yeah, now you know what Anthropic CEO is talking about with maybe taking on a bit too much risk. And you've got Ilya Sutskever, the OpenAI co-founder, says scaling compute is not enough to advance AI. It's back to the age of research again. Boy, it's a good thing he didn't say back to the drawing board. Otherwise, the market might have freaked TF out. No, he said back to the age of research. Okay, that's a little softer, but it says the same thing. This is bad here. OpenAI co-founder Ilya Sutskever believes the tides of the AI industry will have to shift back to the research phase, which means they're not going to make any money. On an episode of the Dworkish podcast published Tuesday, Sutskever, who is widely seen as a pioneer in modern AI, challenged the conventional wisdom that scaling could be the key roadmap to AI's progress. The wisdom goes that the more compute you have or the more training data you have, the smarter your AI will be. However, Sutskever, who now runs Safe Superintelligence, believes that method is running out of runway. Data is finite and organizations already have access to a massive amount of compute. Is the belief really, oh, it's so big, but if you had 100x more, everything would be so different? It would be so different for sure. But is the belief that if you just 100x the scale, everything would be transformed? I don't think that's true. So it's back to the age of research again, just with big computers. One area that will require more research, according to Sutskever, is getting models to generalize, essentially learn using small amounts of information or examples as well as humans do. The thing which I think is the most fundamental is that these models somehow just generalize dramatically worse than people, he said. It's super obvious. That seems like a very fundamental thing. All right, so It is super obvious. What does he mean by generalize? All right. So generalizing means a human being, right? You see a person get run over by a car and die. And then you see a person get run over by a train and die. You learn, don't stand in front of cars and don't stand in front of trains. However, let's say you're an AI model. You see some big thing coming at you that is neither car nor train. You are unable to generalize that you should get out of the way because your data set that you are specifically trained on doesn't tell you to dodge this thing. It only says, is it a car? Is it a train? No, then I guess I won't die. Splat, you end up run over. Animals, people very easily learn these things in our brains. For whatever reason, this most advanced AI in the world is unable to generalize. And it is obvious at this point that it's unable to do so, which means it's limited by its training data. And we've already fed it the whole freaking internet and it hasn't gotten any smarter. So Sutskever saying back to the drawing board, sucks about your 401k. Okay, let's talk about Snowflake's earnings here. Snowflake's earnings came out yesterday. They were good. Lots of year-over-year growth, but the growth wasn't really enough and investors didn't really like it. Snowflake stock is down 8.7% here, $242.16, down about 22 bucks. Again, good numbers, but look at this thing year-to-date, up 71%. It was priced for perfection. They didn't report perfection. They only reported good. Down goes Snowflake. Salesforce, kind of the opposite, to be honest with you. Salesforce beats on earnings, issues better than expected revenue forecast. Look, Salesforce has made some pretty extravagant promises about what their agent force is going to do. They have seen good growth in agent force. They still need to like 120x in the next 5 years in order to deliver what they promised. But Salesforce earnings were good, and Salesforce was not priced for perfection. So, wow, look at this. Salesforce, though, down at the open. That's interesting. It was up a couple of percent ahead of the opening bell. Now it's down. That's kind of crazy. And look, year to date, Salesforce already down 28.7%. So I was expecting this one to rise here. Okay, now it's back in the green. Either way, muted reaction from Salesforce. Last one of the day here. Chinese executive named suspect in Indonesian radiation case. This is your 2020s bingo update. You got to love this one. Indonesian police have named a Chinese director of a metal smelting company as the suspect in a cesium-137 contamination case that ultimately led to radioactive shrimp and sneakers being exported as far as the U.S. Guys, cesium-137, that is a fission product isotope. That is some very nasty stuff. All right. Normally, when I see articles involving radiation, I'm like, all right, they're overblowing this. This isn't that big a thing. Cesium-137 is freaking nasty. You do not want this stuff anywhere near your butt. Ling Jingzhang, I'm sure I got that wrong, a director of Indonesia-based PT Peter Metal Technology, was designated a suspect in the spread of the man-made isotope at an industrial estate in Western Java, a government task force said Thursday in Jakarta. Lin had not been in charge and isn't in custody, but he has been barred from leaving the country. Task Force spokesman Barakrishna Hasabuan told reporters, he said Lin returned from China last month to assist the probe and has been cooperating. Investigators believe the contamination originated at Peter Metal over the summer, citing high radiation levels detected at the company's factory and furnace. The task force suspects an industrial or medical gauge containing cesium was improperly discarded and mixed in with scrap metal that was smelted by Peter Metal, said Hasabon in the interview. All right, so we've actually seen stories like this. It didn't come from a nuclear power plant. This is medical isotopes. We actually had a very similar story in Brazil many years ago. Somebody illegally disposed of a medical device that contained cobalt-60 in Brazil. Some scrapper opened it up. He found this shiny blue thing inside of it. He took it home, and he actually made jewelry out of it and gave it to his wife. Spread it all over the place. 4 people died in Brazil from that. This looks like something similar, the improper disposal of a medical device that contained medical isotopes. This guy didn't care. He just tossed it in the furnace. It melted. He spread cesium all over the area. Next thing you know, you've got this nasty stuff in shrimp and sneakers, apparently. So there's your 2020s bingo update for today. Don't worry, guys. We got, 4 more years of this decade. What's the worst thing that could happen? Don't answer that. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. How do we say this? Mr. Jim E. Perveri? Mr. J. Thank you, Jay. Thank you, Jim. Jim Epiveri, I think. Thanks, Jim, for becoming a YouTube member. Appreciate that very much. Welcome to the Melonheads. Thank you for supporting the channel. And, oh, we've got another one, Pandemonium Paladin 1798, another new Melonhead. Welcome, guys. Just a reminder, everybody, new members, you get one free super chat a month. Use that. I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. Mr. PP Poo Poo, the four P's, says, with the powers of Jack, Melody, Wright, and Travis combined, do you form Captain Planet? Yeah, I'm more of a Voltron guy, I gotta say. I'm a child of 80s television. I came up back in the day. Yeah, I'm a little more Voltron here, all right? I don't care who forms the head. That's fine. But the one thing I'll say, if we are going to do Voltron, forget the missiles, forget the attacking with the lions. Let's just lead with the blazing sword. That seems to work well every time. Let's just go to that right away and skip the whole fight and all the stuff that never works. Just make the sword. What are we doing here? Anyway, thank you for peace. Appreciate the support of the channel. Shout out to Melody and Travis at Real Estate Mindset as well. Metal Seer, been a Melonhead for 10 months, says, do presidents' economic goals differ from the countries? Huh. Well, here's the president's economic goals, all right? The one that I disagree with. The president's main economic goal, based on his language and what he says, is endlessly pumping the stock market. That should differ from the countries, or at least 90% of the countries, because right now, 90% of the country doesn't give a shit about higher stock prices and higher home prices. They don't. They need jobs. They need their wages to keep up with the rising cost of living, and they are not. All right. So whether they realize it or not, that is the most important thing to 90% of the country, is that we get job growth and that we get real wage gains. Endlessly pumping the stock market will not make that happen. Endlessly pumping the stock market is what drives the K-shaped economy, where the rich do really well and everybody else does very poorly. And right now, the president, in order to endlessly pump the stock market, he wants easy monetary policy, and that's going to make inflation worse. So yes, that does differ from the countries. I do think what he's doing with tariffs, although he is going about it haphazardly and clumsily, I do think his efforts to reshore manufacturing to the U.S. are the right move for the country in the long run. Unfortunately for President Trump, the pain gets here first, and this country has no discipline and no pain tolerance. So I don't think we're going to be able to take the pain long enough for the benefits to eventually materialize, if they ever do. It's my opinion they will eventually. But the whole take your medicine idea never polls well. So the pain gets here first. And he's shown, as soon as the pain arrives, he blinks, hence the term taco. Thank you, Metal Seer, for supporting the channel. Old Graybeard 104, leaving a super sticker. Thank you very much, Old Graybeard, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much, sir. Harmonair LLC says, Bessent and Hassett, central casting. Yeah, there's a little central casting going on in the back room over at the Federal Reserve. Hey, what happens at the Fed stays at the Fed. You guys do what you want. It's none of my business. Just try to leave the rest of us out of it. That's the one thing I want to add there. Thank you very much, Harmonair LLC. Old Graybeard back again. He says, any clue why Carvana ripped 90 points in a week in this economy? Fraud is why Carvana rips 90 points in a week. That's why Carvana is hiding their losses on the balance sheets of DriveTime, which is owned by CEO Ernie Garcia's father. That is what Carvana is doing. It's quite obvious. Everybody in the car space is struggling here, except this one company. Are they really that good? By the way, did they rip 90 points? Like 90% or 9%? Basis points versus points, that's a different thing. But I am not touching Carvana with my worst enemy's money. That company will go belly up someday, and Ernie Garcia will be in jail someday. Mark my words. Thank you very much, Old Gray Beard, for supporting the channel. Buck 40 Pool Genius. That's a long one. He says, looking forward to hearing your comments on Jensen on Rogan. Thanks for all the great work. I really have a hard time listening to Jensen Huang talk. I really do. I love Joe Rogan. I don't think Joe Rogan asked the important questions. And I haven't watched the whole interview, so I can't say this for sure. I hope he asked the question, why are you running the largest accounting fraud in history? I don't know. Short of asking that question, if I was to interview Jensen Huang, my first question would be, how do you live with yourself for what you know you have already done to the average person's retirement account? I don't think I'm going to land that Jensen Huang interview anytime soon. I won't ask him to sign my shirt. That's for sure. And his jacket is stupid. That's about all I'll say. Why are you ruining people's lives by the millions? And will you please take off the jacket? That would be my interview with Jensen Huang. I hope Joe Rogan asked some hard questions. I really do. I don't think he did, though. Thank you, Buck 40, pool genius. Steve Wojtas says, the mods are the chat's immune system, killer T cells they are. Here's one for the mods. Hey, being a moderator is a thankless job. So let me just say thank you to the mods. That is Nan, M&J, and Mish. Thank you for everything you guys do for the channel. I do appreciate that. And thank you, Steve Wojtas, for supporting the channel as well. Tugs McBoat says, thank you for all you do, Jack. I'm putting together my holiday reading list. Top five books you would recommend. Nonfiction is okay. All right, do I have it here? Here's what I'm reading right now. My dad gave it to me. This is pretty good. What Has Government Done to Our Money by Murray Rothbard. This is an easy read. It was written in, like, I think it was written in the 1960s is when he wrote it. Amazing how almost everything he predicted came true. So that's one. Let's also throw The Big Short in there. We'll throw Rich Dad, Poor Dad in there. I'm not crazy about Kawasaki, but that was a pretty good one. When Money Dies is another good one. And what else do I have up on the list? Fourth Turning is up there. Fourth Turning and Tower of Basel were both good reads, but they were hard. They were hard to get through. So take your pick from either one of those as well. Those are a couple that I would recommend. I do have a couple of reading recommendations down on my list. I haven't updated it recently, though. Thank you very much, Tugs McBoat, for that one. Mr. World, since I can't pronounce this, too many consecutive consonants there. I struggle with that. So we're just going to say World. Says, silver pump sustainable or just a flash in the pan? I do think the silver pump is sustainable. Expect pullbacks along the way. We had a pretty violent pullback at the end of October. We have recovered and then some already from that. The big thing to watch, if you worry about silver getting too far ahead of itself, watch the gold to silver ratio, the number of ounces of silver it takes to equal the value of 1 ounce of gold. That's the really easy way to tell if it's getting too sustainable. And over the course of my life, the gold to silver ratio has averaged about 65. Spent half the time below, half the time above. Most of the last, say, 5 to 15 years has been above 65. All right, so right now, silver is still relatively cheap compared to gold. It's come down quite a bit. It went as high as like 120 in 2021. It was 105 earlier this year. So silver was ridiculously cheap relative to gold earlier this year. It's come back down to earth, although still cheap. So right now, I do think the silver pump is sustainable on a relative to gold basis. We haven't even crossed the midpoint yet, so it can keep going. Good question from the world there. I just can't pronounce that name. I'm sorry. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys. Come on back tomorrow. Thank you so much, everybody, for the super chats and the support of the channel. Hey, also, you magnanimous Melonhead members on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you guys for everything you do for the channel. Links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.